You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Orlando, Florida, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental, from the MLS Digital HQ, presented by Wells Fargo, a.k.a. the Ace Cafe. I am Andrew Wiebe with my what, Charlie?
My partners in soccer.
Wow, you couldn't say that any cornier if you tried. Charlie Davies, David Goss, Matt Doyle, doing it late night this
now
time.
Charlie's an official citizen
Does
of Wichita
sound that corny?
After saying that. Yeah.
Come on, hold on. Time out. Time out. We'll get to the MLS All-Star game presented by Target.
Make it cool.
Yeah, but Charlie's intentionally making it corny. He's like, he's laming it up.
No, I mean, I'm just mimicking exactly how you say it.
Well.
All right, fine. I didn't realize this was going
to
be a roast.
No, I thought that was somewhat clever. Okay.
My partners in soccer.
Well, that's dead and gone. That's over for me. I'll never say that ever again.
No,
you've
Andrew,
ruined it. You've
it makes
ruined
me
it.
Feel so good
I'm so
when you
sensitive.
Say it.
You're like my law firm. I consult with all of you. We are, of course, at the MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. In years past, this sort of show would have been done in a hotel room. Perhaps someone who's not here and whose name I won't mention lying on the floor, incapacitated. In this case, we're just really tired. Because it's been a long, wonderful week here in Orlando. Festivities, I mean, EMLS events, concerts, skills challenge for the first time, the homegrown game presented by Energizer, and the game tonight. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Turkish food.
Turkish food.
It's yes. Literally events of the highest order.
Yes. Good. I'm glad that if I'm getting roasted here, at least Stu Holden is getting it as well.
Yeah, of course.
Because that line, he's got to retire that
he's
line.
Gotta,
if I'm retiring partners
slam
in soccer,
dunk that line yeah, in the trash.
He's got to get rid of that one. We got some good interviews coming up for you. Walker Zimmerman of LAFC stopped by Digital HQ earlier this week. So did Chris Wondolowski. He's going to talk LAFC culture with Walker. And then Mateus Almeida, profe. With Wando. He said he was a little bit nervous, didn't know how it was going to go. Obviously, it's going really well now. And then Graham Zusi stopped by, an Orlando native son. He's going to talk about being a club lifer because he's been supporting Kansas City or Kansas City Wizards, depending on the era, TID, for his entire career. So we'll get those in a little bit. We got a jam-packed mailbag. We promise we will get to that whole thing. We kind of skimped on it last time around here, and I felt bad about
Shocking.
That.
Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Dave does all the work to get the mailbag together, and then it's Doyle's fault because he talks the entire time.
It's true.
Doyle was barely on the show. It was Mark Anthony yeah. Kay.
All right. It was a good interview. To be fair,
fantastic.
I usually kind of tune out on player interviews. Mark Anthony Kay is really good.
Go back and listen to that one.
Good
on
to
Monday.
Know Doyle's really locked into the
just
show.
Boom, boom. He's
athletes are boring.
Well,
until they retire. Then they're fun.
Right, Charlie?
I don't know. I might disagree with that one.
All right. The result here tonight in Orlando at Explorer Stadium, 3-0 Atletico Madrid. That's the fourth straight game. The MLS All-Stars have lost to Euro competition. They're now 7-8, so below 500 since the format started
Fire the
in 2005.
Coach. Fire got to make a coaching change.
Well, I mean, that joke was a little too fitting given the season that Orlando's having right now. James O'Connor's got some work to do, but tonight I don't think anybody will judge him harshly for. Marcus Llorente, who just got transferred from Real Madrid to Atletico, he scored the first goal, was the MVP. That's because generally, as these things go, MVP voting is like in the 70th minute. And then in the 85th, João Félix, the $150 million or whatever it is, dollar man, knuckles one past Nick Raimondo, then he puts one on a dime for Diego Costa to put in the 90+3. So that's how you get the 3-0. What'd you guys make of the game? We won't spend too much time on this. It's an exhibition. It's an all-star game. It's really about fun. What'd you think? You were there, so how about you just take this?
I think zero things about the game
okay,
on the
sure.
field. Otherwise, it was really fun.
How close? How many feet was the closest you were
to Diego Simeone?
Correct.
I was extremely close.
Could you touch
Diego
him?
Diego Simeone.
Did you try to touch him?
No.
Emotionally?
I would like to have it on the record that I never did that. Did
just what?
In case potentially I did. I would like it on the record to be that I never did. And there was a guy sitting next to me just chirping Diego Simeone in Spanish, and he turns to me and just goes, I saw him play at the Nou Camp. I did the same thing to him 20 years ago. I was like, why would you do it again? What's the point of that?
It's all come first full circle.
Play the hits.
That's why. Exactly.
Simeone just walking the sideline, getting his team compact, constantly getting his team compact. That was awesome. Curveball was the Inter Miami fans. Massive group of Inter Miami supporters outside partying, barbecuing. They came inside and basically filled up a whole gate. And I think security at Orlando City already hates them. So we're off to a good start.
Beautiful.
With that one.
Beautiful.
Yeah. That's what you need.
Just like the Orlando fans clearly hate anybody who's an Atlanta player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the last one.
That was awesome. Yeah.
The atmosphere is awesome. Like, it's cool how much people in this city care about their team. You saw it at the Skills Challenge. Like, they didn't care about the stars from Atletico. They didn't care about Wayne Rooney. They wanted Orlando to win, and they cheered for them the whole time. And today, they booed Guzan right off the bat. They booed Guzan when he came off and Joseph came on. They were excited for Nani. Everyone was chanting for Nani around me. So that was pretty cool.
Do you think that Orlando City would have won if Chris Mueller had been on the All-Star team? Because he was the hero of the skills competition.
Yeah, probably. Chris Mueller, cash. Give it to him.
Absolutely. I saw that interview you guys did while I was gone.
Yeah.
He's got personality.
Best interview we did.
He's one of the rare athletes, Charlie, that has real personality.
Because he went to Wisconsin.
You can really feel it.
Everyone knows that.
See, I could pick them out. I know which guys you can get everything you want and
that's
more.
That's your superpower?
Yeah.
You see him on the field?
Okay, yeah, he's got it. Yeah, he's got it.
What was, anything about the game? Anything that really stands out? Anything you want
to
dig into?
What stands out to me is how good Atletico Madrid are. They're going to be a problem in La Liga for every team. Barcelona, Real Madrid already know after getting whooped 7-3 this preseason. Diego Costa is a man that's on fire. He wants to succeed. You could tell he wants to hit the ground running in La Liga. The goal today, the four goals against Real Madrid, he wants to rediscover that form he had at Chelsea. And you see João Félix. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, the next Cristiano Ronaldo, well, he lives up to that bill already now. You could see that he's ready to take those expectations on. He wants to put that on his shoulder and own it. That's so impressive for a 19-year-old to do that in that atmosphere.
20 goals last year in the Portuguese league now makes just a massive, almost inconceivably large move. Money-wise, Atletico has had
it's really nerve-wracking being around him.
Really?
Really?
He seems so innocent. He was like taking pictures with Kaká on the field after the skills
challenge. For sure, but think about this. What's the most expensive thing you've ever been around in your entire life?
That's a good point.
Like, what if I trip
flown on an airplane
and fall on João Félix's ankle? It's a $133 million ankle. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
but you would be celebrated in the other side of Madrid.
Yeah, I don't want to be there. Like,
that's true. You could be a hero.
I don't want to be any part
of that. You could maybe make a career off that.
I don't want any part of that. Don't you put that evil on me.
Any MLS All-Stars that you were like, oh, this was a – I saw something interesting from them, or even just like, that was a nice moment.
I mean, given the relationship between Orlando City fans and Atlanta United players – I thought it was great of PT Martinez to give away so many souvenirs. Anytime he got near goal, he was straight into the crowd.
He's throwing daggers.
So, and you know, generous.
I'm pretty sure they were going toward the wall at that point, too. So he's giving it right to the most ardent supporters.
It's a lot of love.
Throwing daggers at an all-star
game. I was there for the first half, and I was really impressed. And, when they booed Guzan in the warm-ups, I turned to the people next to me, and I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly what I was hoping for from these fans.
I saw some of the most cynical people that we know, like our good friends, like Pablo Mar, for example, being like, it is loud in here.
And everyone's
and after a rain delay.
That's true.
They were drinking beer in the concourse.
For sure.
So, like, you know, that increases the noise naturally.
But behind the goals, bottom deck, everyone stood the entire, basically what Nani was on the field the first 35, 45 minutes. Wayne hit a couple long balls to Nani, and I was right there watching him take guys 1v1. He megged someone, got fouled, but the referee didn't call it.
Yeah, what's with that?
It's an all-star game for everyone, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, it was fun.
All right, that's it for MLS All-Star as far as the game goes. The week is what it's really about, and I said this last year, and I heard myself say it over and over and over again in the hallway leading to the Ace Cafe. Like, if it's not on your calendar, go and do it. But really, you should. Wherever Wait, it is next year is going to be a blast. Yeah, I'm trying to just bring a little levity here because I'm still reeling from Charlie taking something away from me that I held dear for a matter of like 5 months.
My partner's in soccer.
Oh, okay, all right, no Jeez. More. Golly, willikers. All right.
You guys have spent way too much time together.
We're a little
week.
Bit punchy. We're a tad punchy, yeah. What was your favorite moment from the week? Take the game away. Just a week overall, what was your favorite moment?
Was unprepared for that question.
Yeah, you were. So I'll
which
take
is
it.
Surprising.
It was obviously Howard Webb and Zlatan having a little chat. Was it on Tuesday at All-Star Training?
Yeah, it was up
and
in the
Zlatan
concourse.
Zlatan gesticulating and Howard Webb trying to explain God knows what to him. Probably something about elbows and the side of heads and whatnot. Yeah. But that's just like one of those moments that as an MLS nerd, as a MLS now referee nerd, I look at that and I'm just like, I want to know everything these guys are saying to each other, and it would happen nowhere else but the All-Star Game because this is where everybody just kind of gets dumped into a city, mixed together, and all these weird, bizarre meetings and conversations and happenstance happen, and to have just days after the controversy, Howard Webb and Zlatan face-to-face working it out or whatever they were doing, that was just a brilliant moment.
I'll give you a little cherry on top. He walked down and then walked up to Bastian Schweinsteiger and said, hey, man, for a 70-year-old, you look pretty good. It was a shot from Zlatan fast. He was out there just pinging guys.
Both those guys at Man U together.
Yeah.
What do you think?
For me, it's EMLS. The EMLS event here, Bion West, director of EMLS, continues to put on these unbelievable events. EMLS Cup was a hit. And they come here. The place is packed. You had Alvaro Morata and Vitolo down here playing games against some of our EMLSers, and the vibe was good, the food was good, and you just had that. This is the place you want to be. That's what I expect now going to an EMLS event, to be entertained and for everyone to get along.
The nice thing is about events like that, and just the whole thing, you can actually see that Atletico Madrid players, they really enjoyed it. Yeah. Which sometimes you think, like, these guys come in, they're in preseason, they're being asked to do a lot as far as media is concerned and, like, promotion. Mm-hmm. They might be a little cynical and just be like, meh, not about, meh, trying to go to dinner, trying to go to the hotel and just, like, sit on my phone. No, every time I saw Atletico Madrid players, they were smiling, they were into it, they're like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. Anybody going Nani? Anybody going Skills Challenge? Because that's the thing I think ultimately everybody will remember.
Yeah, I think that was going to be my answer, but the reality is my favorite part now is when Charlie roasted you at the start of the show.
That's true.
Can we replay that? Can we maybe just close the show with
Anders,
that as
our
well?
Producer. Producer Anders has actually been in my ear this entire time laughing, telling me we're absolutely clipping that. It's the first thing I'm pulling out to distribute to the masses.
I will remember that moment forever, but like the Nani thing was so cool because I'm a pretty skeptical guy. You may have noticed. And I like the skills challenge, I wasn't feeling it. And within like 5 minutes, you could tell that the players out there, like, okay, it wasn't just about putting on a show. Like, it was competition. Like, as soon as they got the fire in their eyes, then I started feeling it too. And I think the crowd started feeling it. And then it gets down to the end. And like the last skill was essentially crossbar challenge. And Nani pinging it from midfield as time expires for the win. That was dope.
You couldn't
script that better.
Absolutely
not.
And I want to see what is next year because this was the first go round. It's where you work out some of the kinks, and to get that result is just like it's magic the first time. But they can make it better. They can find ways to kind of hone the events, the process, the broadcast, everything else. And I have to imagine.
Add a team.
Yeah. Legends.
Legends.
Legends. Can we get Cuauhtemoc in here? Yeah. I know he's got duties as a mayor.
Give me Valderrama. Pinging
yes.
balls at targets.
I think you need like a legend from the first
David
era.
Beckham.
You need the mid era, and then yeah. Oh, and Inter Miami comes in. It's perfect.
Yep.
Money. Bring David in.
All right, next year.
All right,
done.
There it is. Let us know
All
who
right.
you want MLS legend.
Oh, wait, get it done.
Owners too, because you get David in, and you can get Mia Hamm, and then there and James Harden. There's the owners
oh,
group.
Wow. Oh, wow. Steve Nash.
Now we're
Steve
Nash. Oh wow. Well. Now we're rolling here.
Yep.
Yeah, guys,
you know, right,
you can pay us later.
You can send the consulting fees to us. You can make that out to Andrew Wiebe, and I will distribute it to my partners in soccer. All right? Look, it's been a great week. We had a lot of fun here. But MLS doesn't stop. We'll get to the big games of the weekend here in just a second. You got a big one on Fox on Saturday at 5 p.m. Atlanta LA Galaxy, New England LAFC, and then on Sunday you have a triple header on national TV, ESPN and FS1. We'll get to those in just a second. We do have some mail from the All-Star Game. I'm going to get to that before we get to the rest of it. Luke from Waterloo, Iowa says, I'm sitting here watching the All-Star Game as Pomacle and Barco are about to get subbed in together. So the question is, Pomacle or Barco? Who's better right now? Who will be at a better club, a better situation in 5 years? Who will be the first to get a senior level national team cap? That last one he says is for you, Doyle. I want to focus on the first two. Who's better now? I'm guessing maybe people are going to say Pomacle. I don't know. Maybe we're biased in here.
Yeah, it's Pomacle.
What did you say, Barco or Pomacle?
Barco.
Okay, so we have a split there. That's okay. I want to know who's going to be at a better club, better situation in 5 years. Make your predictions.
I think Pomacle's just a better player all around. He's a much better defensive player. Like, he's an elite, nearly Tyler Adams-level defensive player, but then he combines that with the ability to be a high-level distributor going forward and combines well around the box. Look, man, there's already big clubs after Paxton Pomacle. Now, he might not go for as big a number as Barco goes for, because having an Argentinian pedigree matters in the world transfer market, and that's just the way it is, because we haven't developed a ton of high-level players. But I think what Pomacle's done, his ability to conduct a game, to influence it on both sides, I don't see a ton of weaknesses with him. For Barco, as gifted as he is, and he's really gifted on the ball, he does that Nagby thing where he will eliminate defenders off the dribble, and then rather than make the killer pass, he slows down, he lets them back into the play, and he plays sideways. If he's going to be an attacking midfielder, he needs to make better progressive passes. If he's going to be a winger, he needs to stretch the field vertically. He doesn't do either of those things, so I worry about where he would fit at a big club.
I think he's changed a lot in a lot of ways when you look at this season compared to last. This season, once actually he came in as a substitute in the first half against the New England Revolution on the road, banged two goals, he took off. Unfortunately, injuries have derailed that progress that he's shown throughout the season. Hit the U-20 World Cup with that banger volley. He's playing with confidence. I feel like this De Boer system fits him better than what it did with Tata Martino. So he's thrived. He's one of the players that I look at is thriving with De Boer as coach, and he needs to be on the field, needs to be healthy. And I think once he does get his fitness back, this Atlanta side may start making those strides.
I'm going to split this one and say Barco's at a better club and Pomacle's in a better situation in 5 years. I think Pomacle will be a starter for a good team in one of the top three or four leagues, and I think Barco will be sitting on the bench at one of the top teams in the world.
All right, CM hit us up and says, the skills competition was simply awesome. I'm thinking even more so that the All-Star Game is something unique to MLS that people around the world would love to see. Stu Holden was saying on the broadcast, he heard from his friends in England and around from different spots overseas saying, whoa, that's interesting, that's different, that's fun. We would love to do that as well. CM asks, is there any other soccer league in the world that does something similar? I haven't seen, honestly, anybody do anything like this other than, like, you know, YouTube content creators and like Instagram people. We've done it a couple times here to a lesser extent with like the EA Sports Challenge. It wasn't streamed. It wasn't quite as big. He says it would be sweet. CM says if there was a skill competition before the final, MLS Cup. That's not going to happen.
No.
But
no.
But this is not going anywhere anytime soon. So I hope you enjoyed that. It'll be back next year. Let's just get into the games this weekend. Let's start with Atlanta, LA. Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Atlanta, don't seem that happy if you believe the All-Stars here. Don't seem like they're enjoying life all that much. And maybe that's just in comparison to what it was like under Tata Martino. This is a big opportunity for them. Doyle, you've repeated over and over and over the stat. What is it? Last 12 games.
5-6-1.
It's not 5-6-1 in the last
12 games. They had that 5-game run of shutout wins. And since then, they've been a below 500 team. And they don't look happy, like as we've been saying, and they're super talented, so they can get results just based off that. But that's not enough. It's not enough to just be talented, and we've seen that repeatedly in MLS, especially in the TAM era, as there's a talent differential that's kind of spread out. It's not enough, and they don't have an identity now, and it feels like they're no closer to having one, maybe even further from having one than they were in March. Look, they're still going to make the playoffs. I'd be shocked if they don't make the playoffs. But we're talking about maybe not getting a home game here. That's significant. Harder to win on the road. Plus, just what it means to that city to be that city that has that team, and you know that come playoff time, you're going to get 30 of your closest friends and 50,000 other of your closest friends and put them into that stadium. It's tough. They got to start winning. They got to start showing that they know what they're doing.
Last four games, they lost to Seattle. They beat Houston, whooped up on them at home, beat DC at home, and then they lost at LA. They're back at home.
I think there's a good matchup for them. When you one without Zlatan, obviously, for the Galaxy. He's suspended for this one, so there's less threat up top. And I think when you look at the Galaxy back line, specifically Polenta playing at left back, who's just not a natural left back, I think what they've done over the last few games, what they did at least at home against DC, which I think you'll see again, is that five-man back line, let Gressel fly forward, pull Polenta a little wide, and then Escobar plays as the right center back or whoever it is, and then they bomb in over the last 40, 45 minutes, and that creates openings and gaps for guys like Nagby or Barco or PT, whoever's there, to find openings. I think the Galaxy backline is one that you can get disorganized, and you can get it chaotic, and without Zlatan up top, you just don't have that giant threat, and I think this is a good game for them to not show what they're doing, but get wins. And that's what they need to do at this point to make everyone happy. It doesn't have to be pretty yet. It needs to be like, I like where I'm at, and we're all happy to be here before you can get to the next step.
Because there is massive pressure on this game, I believe. Not just because it's on national TV. I'm not sure that the coaches and the players are all thinking, okay, we have to win because of that. But because you had this week and the players saying, we don't really like this. This isn't really working that well for us. The past was better than the present in our minds. Now Frank DeBoer has to find a way to get them to go out there against a team that doesn't have Zlatan at home with the big crowd. They should win this game. If they are going to be the team they think they are, they will win this game. And that's where pressure comes from. Narratives, media, talk, emotions in the locker room, and the expectation that they get 3 points. New England at home against LAFC, Charlie, though, feel like they're just kind of they're going to play without any pressure. Because they got the Supporter Shield leaders in town at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday on ESPN+. They're 11 games unbeaten. If they lose this one, it's just a blip, and it's to the best team. It's a huge opportunity for Bruce Arena to put one over Bob Bradley, by the way, but also to show his
the
team.
The first ever babysitter of his kids.
Wait,
that's
who?
What? Said this week.
Wow. No.
Who? Wait.
Bruce said that about Bob.
Oh, I thought, I was like, yeah. Charlie?
No, Charlie.
I was like, Bruce Arena?
Charlie.
Is watching
how
Charlie's
old do you
kids?
Think I am?
What?
I'm Benjamin Button, actually.
Yeah.
No, I think that when you look at this match, it's not a six-pointer. It doesn't mean that much to LAFC. However, it means the world to New England because if you do win, now you have that inner belief that we can play with the best. And I don't think they quite think that they can compete with the LAFCs and the Portlands and the Seattles. But if you win this game, all of a sudden that belief really is sparked inside that we can make a run, we can play with the best, and that we are a great team. We have a great team. We're tested now. And that'll be 12 games unbeaten. So this is one of those matches where you look at a Carlos Heel and what he can do for New England Revolution, carving out space for players like Teal Bunbury, who's made great runs in behind. He's been finishing his chances. Christian Pena has really excelled under Bruce Arena. Bruce has been able to push guys and get them to play better. Christian Pena has been very inconsistent. He's one of those guys that has been a spark off the bench. Then when he started, he's been good, but then he's got lost his pace, hasn't been as aggressive. Now he's getting them to be aggressive for 90 minutes to push the envelope. They're winning games by 3-4 goals. That was unheard of before. Now they know, okay, we can score goals, and we can also shut out. Matt Turner has the best goals against average over the past month and a half. That's remarkable that he's been able to turn this whole thing around from the back and up top. And so when you look at this midfield battle, Carlos Heel, Atuesta, and Mark Anthony Kay, what's going to be done there? Are they going to sit back and look to counter press? Is New England going to sit back and make it compact, make it tough for LAFC, and frustrate Carlos Vela? Because everything is going to be on Carlos Vela. All the attention is going to be on Carlos Vela. Can Rossi have a big game? That's when they're going to need Diego Rossi to really step up and score goals.
I love this matchup for a few reasons. One, we always get asked, and I've had it a few times this week, is so-and-so for real? You know, are the Revs for real?
Right.
Whatever team. LAFC at Seattle at Red Bulls. That's the next three games. They're going to find out themselves, and we're all going to find out. They're going to prove a lot, or we're going to figure out that maybe they're a sixth or seventh place team, which is also still a huge improvement in the Eastern Conference. One of the things I question with the Revs is when they're not going downhill, when they're not the attacking team, how can they do? Because they play pretty much two or three fullbacks that are wingers. And so when you talk about Vela and Rossi, this is a chance to see those guys under pressure. How does Brandon Bai defend 1v1? How does, is it whether it's Jones or Castillo, how do they defend? And then is there enough help at center back to do, to help them out to survive these matchups? We saw the Galaxy do it against Vela with Polenta, which I was shocked to see, but they were able to do it, and Jonah was a big part of that, helping from the middle. So I think this is a fascinating matchup, and these this next 3 weeks for the Revs is going to be huge for what 2019 is.
That's the Revs side. For the LAFC side, let's go to Walker Zimmerman. He stopped by the MLS Digital HQ, presented by Wells Fargo on Monday. Let's take a listen to that interview now. All right, let's keep the All-Stars rolling through here. Walker Zimmerman joining us in the MLS Digital HQ, presented by Wells Fargo. Walker, to start you off, which Barca player are you? Marc-Anthony Kay says he's like a mix of Busquets and maybe Xavi or Iniesta. So when you watch film, are you PK? I guess I have to be, right? You don't get it. Bob has not made a comparison.
No, I think we have watched some clips of PK, watched some of the movements that he does, his footwork. We focus on that for 1v1 defending, so... I would say PK. Yeah.
Were you a Barca fan before?
Yeah, I was. It's always fun to watch them, especially back when they were kind of on that run where they were just unbelievable. So got to watch them a lot.
Now you watch
now
them
we watch them quite often. In film, we watch them. Man City, Liverpool, those would be the big three teams that we probably watch
and
all the time.
Who's your favorite center back to watch?
I like watching Sergio Ramos too, to be honest. I really, especially watching his set pieces. I like watching his movement on set pieces. I think he has a knack for finding the ball, and it's cool to see like the way he changes it up. But I certainly don't go into as many reckless challenges as him, or drift maybe as much as he does. But I think it's always interesting when you watch him play.
So take us into your mind on a set piece. It's a corner kick. Where are you trying to set up?
Well, I can't give you all the...
That's true. Maybe generalities? Like, what are you looking for on a set piece?
First thing is zone or man marking. So if it's man marking, you look at, okay, can I get a pick somewhere from a teammate? Is he... What side of your hip is he on? Is he on your left or your right? And then if it's a zone, you look at the space. Where's the space that you can maybe attack? And then you just got to kind of commit to that run in that space and hope the ball finds you. So a lot of different things. It's great having guys like in my career, like Carlos, who serves a good ball. Mauro Diaz, when he was in Dallas, served a great ball. So a lot of it's putting trust in those guys to kind of put it in a good spot. And then hopefully you can find some success with it. So hoping we can get a few more here in 2019.
Is there anyone in MLS where you don't look at them, try and mark you, and be like, I'm about to dunk on this guy? Like, who do you fear in the air?
You probably don't fear anybody.
Yeah. Who do you think is maybe your
equal? Gonna give you, who's going to give you competition?
Me and Ike had a funny little back and forth on the Benny and Sal podcast.
Oh,
shout out to you guys.
Good plug.
Okay.
Well done.
Yeah, so one of Ike's questions was about, you know, who's better in the air. And so I know that we would both say ourselves, which is totally fine. But I definitely love his aerial game for sure. He's obviously been one of the best aerial players past 10 years. So he's a big-time guy.
What do you think about the fact that Ike is maybe the best part of the Benny and Sal podcast, but Ike is not a part of the name, nor is he visually represented in any way on that podcast?
I don't know why he signed up for that, other than I know Benny can be pretty persuasive sometimes, but, I mean, Ike's got to get his name in there somehow.
Ike's getting slam dunked on his own podcast.
Right. Yeah,
but can
is.
I throw this out there? Because Graham mentioned it as he walked off. If you add his name into the acronym, if it went first, it would be IBS.
I did think about that. I told Ike
not
that
smooth.
As well.
Not SBI, shout out to
SBI. Yeah, SBI, we get a old throwback, but you got to share you know, the Google algorithm there. The SEO is not great for you. I can understand why they pushed him off.
Yeah.
Take us inside your decision to re-sign with LAFC.
Well, I mean, I think I had a very good experience there year one. Saw a lot of positive things with the way the club was going. The personnel that we have, the coaching staff, I felt like I was still developing as a player. And that's something that was really important to me was, am I in an environment where I can get better every day? And I think the staff, with their help, the way we train, the way we play, I think it helps me as a defender. So it was a great decision, I think, looking back.
Where have you improved the most since being with LAFC?
I would say just on the ball, just being comfortable, expanding the passing game for sure. So it's nice to be in trainings where you're oftentimes asked to be a part of the exercise, whereas sometimes, you know, in Dallas, and it's different. Everything's different. So don't get me wrong. I learned a lot in Dallas as well, but it was a lot more functional. So like defending the box, defending crosses from out wide. And obviously we dropped a little bit more as a team. So now it's a little bit more in isolation, having to work on 1v1 defending, have the ball a lot more, able to kind of start the attack a little bit more, whereas it was probably a little bit more defensive in Dallas.
What was it like going from playing with a veteran like Simon in your first year to being the veteran alongside Segura this year?
Well, I think, I feel comfortable around anyone I'm playing next to be honest. Had some good fortune playing against some quality center backs my whole career, starting back with George John. Matt Hedges, we had a good partnership in Dallas for a few years. Laurent was obviously a very talented player. I think you look at him and his ability on the ball, I think with him leaving, it kind of shifted more of that responsibility to me, and I really enjoyed that. So it's been fun. Eddie's done a tremendous job, I think. Really happy, just actually we announced that he re-signed. So. Yep. Really happy to have him as the partner as well.
One more, we got to get you out of here. Chris Wondolowski is waiting by here. LAFC presumptive favorites for the Supporters Shield. You guys got a big lead there. Same thing goes for MLS Cup, MVP for Vela. What's it like to be on the inside of a team that's making history?
It's a lot more fun, for sure. When you're winning, the vibes are good in the locker room. Everyone's has a good attitude. Everyone's getting recognition, like you mentioned. So guys are happy about that. I think ultimately we know that we're far from securing anything, and so we have the mentality to keep going, win a Supporters Shield, and clinch that number one seed, which will help us in our run to the MLS Cup.
We're not ending with that.
Yeah,
this weekend.
Yes, thank you.
You're taking on New England Revolution.
Yeah,
11 games unbeaten.
Right. Wait, don't go there.
They're the hottest team in MLS. You're the best team in MLS when it comes to points. What do you need to do to ensure that you get 3 points against the New England Revolution?
Yeah, they've certainly been incredible to watch this past little stretch. Obviously, since Bruce took over, you just feel a different energy about the team. They're dynamic in the way they're going forward. Heal's been incredible. Bunbury's finding form. Agudelo playing a little different position. So these are all players that have always been really talented, and now they're kind of coming into form. And so for us as a team, we got to focus on what we do well, counter-press, stay high, be aggressive, create chances going directly to goal, and then looking forward to – that's going to be a really good game again. So now we've got a good stretch where we played, Galaxy, Atlanta, New England. It's a good stretch for us to really find out what we're made of.
Cameras are off now. How much has Bob talked about Bruce? These are the two of the godfathers of U.S. soccer.
I mean, they obviously had that relationship going way back, to Virginia. But honestly, not too much. I know
he's keeping it internal.
Yeah, it's internal. Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of a personal war.
Yeah,
I think he feels that way about like any of other coaches that's like getting some hype. So like anyone who takes over the national team ever, he's like, well, back in my heyday, the way I do it is differently. So I think he always has that kind of edge to him. And I'm sure watching Bruce's success, he's like, I gotta crush him. So
a lot of people have good Bruce impressions. You got to work on your Bob impression.
The way that we play is sharper, more fluid. These are the football ideas that we work on every day.
That was actually
yes. I did not intend for that to come out, but thank you to Walker Zimmerman for sharing that impression with us and a little insight into LAFC. Thanks, Walker.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Big thanks to Walker Zimmerman for stopping by. We will get to Chris Wondolowski in just 1 second. But before, the Toronto Duck has a little mail for us. Who has the more unexpected season, New England or San Jose? Which one is the most shocking?
San Jose, when you look at it from the start. But I think over the course of these 11 games, it's got to be New England.
I think it's got to be San Jose. This is a team that lost their first 4 games. They didn't make any changes. They were hot garbage last
year. That's not true.
Horrible.
Any.
Horrible.
They didn't make many, but they didn't make...
They made some, but they weren't moves that were like, boom, this is going to explode. This is going to change your team.
No earth-shattering moves.
Yeah. Christian Espinoza, he should improve them.
Marcos Lopez.
But they were so bad before that you're like, well, maybe that might get them into like playoff line zone. Right now, they're at 37 points. They're tied with the Galaxy. They're rising. Nobody wants to play this team. They completely believe in themselves. To me, it has to be San Jose.
It's like an MVP
candidate. Yeah, Vaco looks like an MVP candidate. Now, maybe we should have seen this coming because of what Mateus Almeida has done in the past.
Couldn't have seen this. I mean, like, he's been an amazing coach, obviously, in Argentina and then with Chivas. But, like,
especially after those first four games. Wando looked washed. Wando's out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Making huge changes at the end of March. And like, just try to stay afloat and maybe get 25, 30 points this year. And he made two big changes. He put Florian Youngworth back in the center of defense. And he put Jackson Ewell in central midfield. And those two guys are arguably the two best passers in the league at their respective spots. And their ability to distribute has suddenly spread the game out. When they spread you out attacking-wise, they're able to envelop you. And they're able to do that and then create chances by playing those diagonals to those wingers. And it's been Vaco. You're right. It's been Espinoza. You're right. It's been Shea Salinas. Shea Salinas had 6 goals and 3 assists this year. His previous high, career high, for goals was 3. And he got all that to happen. But then he also kept the locker room. Because taking Wando out of the lineup was a huge risk. When you have a guy like that who has meant so much to that team, benching him, it took, we know the word, and Almeida has him. And he got Wando to stay bought in the whole time. And not just Wando, but those other veterans as well. So that when he needed them a month later, they were there. And yeah. That's how, I mean, they're 1 through 25 now, man. They have a huge roster that everybody has contributed. And nobody could have seen this coming.
Well, let's get Wando's perspective on Matheus Almeida right now. We spoke to him on Monday right here at the Digital HQ. Chris Wondolowski sitting down with us now. Chris... Profe, I will run through that brick wall directly in front of us for Matheus Almeida. Will you join me?
I'll join with you, no doubt. Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm in. I'm all in with Matheus. He's an amazing man.
So take us behind the scenes. Just what was it like when he was hired? And then we'll go from there. Because that's a huge name, and it's a completely different sort of profile.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, he has a great resume. You know, obviously he's won championships. You know, I was very interested to see how the dynamic was going to work with him, you know, speaking Spanish only. And, no, but it's been great. From the first day, he sat us down, and from day one, I've been all in. He's very charismatic and a guy that you want to play for.
And is he hands-on on the field or in training, like, tactically?
Yeah, absolutely. He has a great staff, but he's very hands-on, especially during when we're playing. When we're playing, he's all about it, showing us where we need to move the ball, where we need to be. Again, yeah, he's a great staff. He has a strength and conditioning coach, Guido, and he's one of those. He's a hard guy, and but at the same time, he's one of those guys where you want him to respect you, so you do whatever it takes. It's an amazing balance, and it's funny to see.
So when you see him come in, did you feel the pressure to impress because you're starting from scratch and you're the goal scoring king in MLS, but you got a new coach and he doesn't know you that well. So did you feel that pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually felt it more than I ever had. You know, coming off a year where we're dead last, and you know, I'm getting older and knew his style, knew his, you have to be very fit, you have to work hard, you have no idea if he's going to like you or wants to bring in other you know, other guys. And so it was one of those where you kind of had to prove yourself again, and I like that challenge, but at the same time, you never know what's going to happen.
You said fitness, and I think that's the word that I think of when I watch you guys play right now. I mean, it's a beautiful style, mm-hmm. and it's like aesthetically pleasing, but I'm like, how are they running this much?
Yeah.
Guido is the perfect name for a strength coach,
right.
And I heard he
exactly.
had two-a-days in Mexico to start the year?
Yeah, we had two-a-days, sometimes even three with a gym session in there. It was unreal. It was beautiful Cancun, and didn't get to see the beach. Or when we were at the beach, it was a beach runs, you know, in the deep sand. And but at the same time, it's paying off. And it's one of those where we're finally now able to see the results. And he preached this earlier. He told us that when you guys do become one of the fittest teams, 75th minute, you're going to wear teams down. It'll end up 3-4 nothing. A team will get a red card because they'll hate just having you next to them the whole time. And it's working, and it's pretty cool to see, you know, it all coming out to fruition.
You've played this game for a while. He comes in and has a different idea of the way the game's played, different style.
Yeah.
At some point, was it like, this makes no sense, or this is super weird?
Yeah, it was definitely different just because you've had so many, I guess, core values. You know, you have your two banks of four, and, you know, you got to stay in the straight line and make sure you all push up at the same time. And he comes in, he's like, no lines. You go and you step here, and you don't let this guy turn. He's like, the right back's thinking, the left winger's in there, though. Like, where do I go? Do I say, like, no, you go in there. And it was one of those where it's kind of groundbreaking. Being a forward, I love it because it actually requires less running for me. So it's actually a decent thing. anything, but he's amazing, which knowing who to press, the whole staff does their homework and does a great job of coming up with characteristics on each player and how accurate they are with how new they are to the league. It's amazing.
For those of the people out there that maybe don't have a good idea or haven't watched San Jose play much this year, describe for them and for us your style of play. What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go with press. It's just a pressing style. It's a way that we try to dictate it. You know, you hear man marking a lot. I mean, it's not necessarily man marking, but it's if you get to that person next to you. You know, if you see someone in there, that's who you step to. You know, you're not trying to stay in the area, stay in a position. Go press them. If you see, you know, the left back has the ball and this guy, he could pass to him, go step to him. And we like to have one sweeper and the two center backs kind of switch off and, you know, we'll try to keep an extra man back there. And so it's getting him in a certain area. And there's a lot of trigger points where they start the press and certain passes, certain areas of the field kind of dictate what we do and when we go.
Can you talk about the form of Vaco and mm-hmm. how he's kind of just become now one of the most dynamic players in the league?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think he is. And again, I think Matias had a tough decision. You know, Vaco's always been talented, always can do some amazing things with the ball. But necessarily wasn't doing other things that could help the team, you know, in that sense. And so he had we weren't in a great area, you know, great start of the season, but he benched him and would hold him out until he showed this and wasn't not showing in the games, but you have to do it in practice as well. And that's what he preaches. He says there's practice players, there's gamers, and I understand and I'm all for you having these gamers, but you better show me in practice, then you'll get your opportunity in the game. And not an easy decision, but he stuck by it. And, you know, I know Vaco didn't like it and wasn't, but he could have quit, could have said, no, I'm just going to collect my paycheck, but he bought in. And I think it's now shown like he's fit. He can do amazing things. And especially with the style, he gets the ball a lot more 30 yards out rather than at midfield or in our defensive third. And that's a lot more dangerous for us because he does like to dribble and can do great things with it.
Was there ever a moment like preseason or early in the season when you lose fourth straight where you're thinking, man, I know we have Matias Almeida, but we didn't really change this roster, and this team finished, as you said, dead last. Like, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe we should have changed more. Did you ever think that?
I kind of wondered that. You know, I wondered who, you know, maybe we should have changed or, you know, should have. But at the same time, there still was a belief in the locker room, and we still, you know, it's very cliche to say it at preseason. Everyone believes that they can do it, but it was still amazing situation. You know, we lose our fourth straight game at home against LAFC 5-0. Just absolutely could have been worse, to be honest. It was absolutely horrible. And he sat us down and he said, I'm not changing our style. I'm not changing how we're going to play the game. If you guys don't like it, I have no problem. There's no ill will. We will find a good place for you. We could trade you. But I need every single person to buy in on this. And kind of was a changing point. I mean, obviously we kind of changed the lineup around a little bit and that made some difference as well. But at the same time, you know, we've used a lot of guys. We have a very deep team. I think we've had almost 24, 25 different guys play, like 20, 21 different starters or have started at least one game. And it's pretty cool to see.
You mentioned all the change in lineup a little. Jackson Yule was a big piece of that. Give the U.S. national team fans some hope here.
Give him a chance. Great guy. You know, and I think that he has untapped potential. It's sky's the limit for him. He was always very, very tidy with the ball, very sees the game in a great way, and able to connect the passes. I think his tackling and, you know, his ground coverage was his one bugaboo, but this year he's everywhere. If you look at the stats, I mean, he covers more ground, he's winning a lot of his duels. I mean, he's fit in really well and kind of grown into just a special player, and I think he will continue to grow.
Tommy Thompson's now a starter. He's also my favorite for the mayor of San Jose in like 20 years maybe, after that stump speech.
Yeah. No, exactly.
That was directly after Matias Almeida said, I'm not changing.
No, exactly. That's exactly what it was. And I love seeing TD with a little bit of, you know, some character charisma. You know, it was good to see, and he is. He's a good player, and it's fun to see him, you know, have confidence in, mm-hmm. you know, it's a again, confidence is a funny thing. It just kind of snowballs, and you see it. You just see them having joy out there.
Before we let you go, I have a question.
Yeah.
TSL made his biggest bone-crunching tackle in practice so far this year?
Oh, we've seen. So, like, like he like we'll, we do a lot of stuff where it's like offense, like Wednesdays the offense goes and does it, and then defense we bring a lot of the academy guys and they kind of build up, and it's like 6v4, but like so the defense wins it. They try to do a small goal. I saw him just absolutely crush this one kid. Like he came
an
in.
Academy kid?
No, I think it might have been Jutson. It could have been Eric Cavillo, but like he had it and didn't see him. And so like he doesn't normally play. He's just knocking out the balls. But like he just comes and slides and was giving it all. I was just like, I was there over there finishing it. I happened to look over there, just like, oh wow, I'm glad on this side.
You just see long hair, billowing exactly. Line, and somebody going down with. The crunch.
Yeah.
Mateus Almeida, Profe, we've loved watching him. Love watching the resurgence for the Quakes as well, Wando.
Thank you.
Good luck with everything going forward, all right?
Appreciate you guys. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right, back from Wando explaining
over here.
How he's
going to
run through brick walls for Mateus Almeida.
Are we just gonna call Charlie Button from now on?
Do we just call him Button?
Yeah, Button. Charlie just got himself a nickname.
Or we could call him Benji.
Benji.
Yeah, I like Button.
I think Button is a better nickname
Button
for Charlie.
Davies.
No doubt about that one. All right, we got some Sporting Kansas City mail here in the mailbag. We have somebody saying that, he's saying, assuming Weeby doesn't screen these 100% of the time, I almost never do. That's David Goff.
I got four emails the other day that was all about you in a negative way, I'm pretty sure we're all
did
written
you delete
by
them?
You. No, I'm sure you write them yourself.
I didn't.
How could I get stuff about me on the show?
I wouldn't send it to the email. I would literally just put it in the rundown with a fake name and pretend like I found it.
I would delete it because it wouldn't be from the real mailbag,
gotcha.
Obviously.
There's some Sporting KC fans wondering if I'm a frequent poster on Reddit. Argumentative Andy is the screen name. That is not me. I don't actually post on Reddit. I just lurk on whatever you guys are doing. We also have Adam from KC that says, this season has been disappointing. A fall from the top of the Western Conference a year ago. What, if anything, is there to provide me and all the other Sporting Kansas City supporters just a tiny shred of hope? Should I give up and just focus on next year? You are the wise experts,
yes.
He says.
Yes. Throw in the towel. Throw in the towel. This team is a shell of itself.
Button's out here digging graves.
I was the one holding on hope for the Sporting Kansas City team. I was like, they have so much experience. They have some talented players, but throw that all out
the
window.
Yeah, man, this roster is looking like the beginning
Hopeless.
Of Benjamin Button's life, just shriveled, unable to keep up.
Yeah, it's not, they made, in retrospect, Peter Vermees made a terrible bet on Andro Fontas over Aiko Parra. But you have to wonder, like, they would be a significantly better team if they had kept Ike. And then the other thing is, like, Christian Nemeth and Eric Hurtado as your center forwards. But it didn't work out.
What's the hope for next year? Is there?
I think there needs to be a
spend.
Trim and spend.
Yeah.
And it's got to be, you know, Johan Quaze has been a barely a squad player. He's a DP. You gotta do better with what you spend. You know, Daniel Shalloway looked like he was taking a big step forward last year. He's taking a bigger step backward this year. So there has to be internal progress. Yeah.
Charlie,
amazing.
Shredding people today. I like this because it's taking the attention off me just being destroyed early on in the show.
But they're like, what defined Kansas City at the start of this decade was getting improvement from guys like Beisler, Espinoza, Zusi. Failhaber became a better player when he went there. They haven't had that with this new generation. Peter Vermees has to find that.
Grim Zusi's been there a long time. He's seen it when it wasn't very good in the KC Wizards days and through all those great years as well. We talked to him about what it means to be a lifer at Kansas City. Graham Zeus, he's sitting down with us here in the Digital HQ presented by Wells Fargo. Graham, welcome.
Sorry.
What's up, man?
You
face wherever you want to face.
That's why we thought you wore the glasses.
Camera discipline here.
Jeez.
Before we get into this, I want to talk to you about Sporting Kansas City and being like a lifer at a club, but I really want to know if Brad Evans stole your plans for post-career. It feels like he might have. He's living out of an Airstream, going around to national parks, and I truly believe that was going to be your fate.
Yeah, I feel like we may have talked about this before, but he's kind of got an early jump on me, and I'm happy about it because I think I'll have a lot of good recs about the do's and don'ts of van life.
Let him fail.
Yeah,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then you make the improvements.
That's right.
Brad just had a sip in Kansas City. You have been there since, 09. I covered you being drafted in the second round, the first couple years, waiting for an opportunity. Take me all the way back to 2009 to being drafted to coming into the then Wizards organization. It was a much, much different time for soccer in Kansas City.
So I was still at Maryland at the time, and I was actually in class when I got drafted. And I think I got a text from a buddy saying who I went to. I think I may have left the class. I'm not gonna lie.
Class
I think after that, I think I left the class.
Did you announce it? You're like, guys, I just got drafted. I'm leaving. Or is one of them just
professional soccer player? Yeah.
Can't be bothered. I'm out.
Put the backpack on. Right. Leave the laptop. No. It was an exciting time. At the time, Abe Thompson was in Kansas City. Called him shortly afterwards, just to kind of get a little rundown, because I knew absolutely nothing about Kansas City, as I think most people don't going into that situation. But man, how it's changed since I've been there, from Community America Ballpark with the Wizards to now Children's Mercy Park. Maybe my biased opinion, but best stadium in the league.
Was there an underrated aspect to CAB? Was there anything that you actually liked? I remember interviewing Peter by the urinals.
To be fair, the pitch was immaculate. Small, it may have been extremely small, but the pitch was perfect.
And that I feel like that's one thing you always, like, the first thing that comes to mind when, as a college player going to professionals, you're like, let's check the pitch. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You're used to playing on hills in some places. Did you also call some of your former teammates that were already in the league and just asking about, you know, the demands, the day-to-day?
Yeah, I remember specifically Jason Gary was a big kind of mentor throughout college, or I guess for a year of college, and then post college as well. So anytime I got a chance to talk to Jay was a huge learning experience for me. I think he'd probably be the one guy that I really stick out and remember.
Let's say 2020 Super Draft, a Terrapin calls you, that gets drafted. What's your first message to them?
Oh, man. In my eyes, Sasha does such a great job at preparing you for the professional atmosphere. And he creates that atmosphere, and he demands the excellence. The work ethic is something I really kind of grew up with at Maryland, so I think that translated so well. So, for me, getting drafted, I think you saw the importance of it for me. I was in class, so that part of it wasn't what it was all about. At that point, it's just a tryout. It's a glorified tryout. So, I guess just passing along that message, doing what got you, what made you successful at Maryland is what's going to continue to make you successful in the pros as well.
I remember playing against you and the talented team that you had, so much depth. Is there a player that you played with at Maryland that was, you thought was extremely talented, was destined for greatness, but just didn't pan out as a professional?
Stephen King. The guy was, he was brilliant on and off the field, had probably the best engine of any soccer player I've ever played against. And don't get me wrong, he made it to the pros and had a few years under his belt, but I could have seen him being the guy. It's just bizarre that it didn't happen.
No, it's funny because ODP, I started out with Stephen King, and he was that kid that could juggle for hours.
Yep.
We had juggling competitions, and he'd be left foot, right foot for hours, and I'm sitting there like, I can get 100 maybe.
Yep.
And he's still going. Like, he was that talented.
I remember.
Always.
He would, so we'd have a training session, or even in the summer, it'd be one of those brutal, wake up in the morning, do fitness, then have a session on the field. And then you'd see him just kind of trotting off the field. Kinger, where are you going? Oh, I'm just going for a 12-mile run now. What? He's like, just run to D.C. and back or something crazy like that. But, yeah, the guy was wow, man. He was incredible.
So you get to Kansas City, and you're right. It is a glorified trial, essentially. You make the team. But I still remember the first 2 years, stop, start. Is Graham going to earn that starting spot? what were those years like as you tried to kind of move your way in and figure out how to be an everyday starter, a long-term pro, really?
Yeah, again, that aspect of it wasn't anything foreign to me. I played PDL with the Crays, and my early days with them would be a substitute at the end of the game. Maryland started, I think, one or two games my freshman year, and so it's for me, it's always been working my way up to earn that spot. And the professional level was really no different for me. So I guess all my years before MLS prepared me for that.
You get into the team, and then you go from the Kansas City Wizards to Sporting KC. Did it mean anything to you guys on the team? Like, did it change anything? Did it matter?
Not really. That part didn't matter. I know it kind of pissed off a lot of people in Kansas City. But that part of me, the stadium was everything for me. You know, having something of our own, a true fan base that got behind us after they built that. And for me, that's when it all kind of turned around. Yeah,
I remember the goals. Bobby Warshaw does too. The one from like half field that Davey Arnault, I think, goaded you into hitting. The one against Portland that's sort of iconic with the John Strong call.
Right.
There seemed like a time where it just kind of clicked for you, where everything started working out. I don't know if it was just that it started clicking on the field in games and you were doing it in training the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Did you feel a moment where it's kind of like, oh, wow, I feel different. I'm performing differently. Things are working.
Well, I think it's easiest to look at those few games. It's funny. So the season our stadium opened, we did that 10-game road trip.
Somewhere in there.
Something like that. 10-game road trip. I think we had one win out of the 10 games. Came home. I wasn't supposed to start that first home game. Ryan Smith got injured in warm-ups. And I end up starting, and the energy from that game just kind of boosted me through. And I had a strong game, but the next game was that Dallas game, and that's when I think I scored two goals. Next game was the Portland game, had two more goals, I believe. And you know what confidence can do in this sport? It's everything. That kind of pushed me through the rest of the season, and got a little taste of it. And then off season is when I put in probably the most work I put in my life. So it was getting that little taste of success and on field success and being in that starting lineup that made me never want to look back. So
when you go through the whole process of building yourself up.
Yeah.
Now you're hitting the ground running, you're high. Mm-hmm. When's the next time that you felt a big drop, like not rock bottom, but a big piece of adversity in your career?
Honestly, it'd probably be this year, to be completely honest. We had a fantastic year last year. We won the West, which is a big accomplishment in itself. Deep push into the playoffs. Champions League early in the year. I mean, you could look at the Champions League as being a successful run as well. The way we went out was a little bitter, but for whatever reason, we kind of hit this lull in our season. And typically, our Kansas City teams have been very good at scratching and clawing our way out of it, and for whatever reason, this one's just lasted longer than we would have liked. So this has been a frustrating year for myself and for the team. So, but it's not over. So
I would have thought you would have said switching to right back.
No, that rejuvenated my career, man.
Okay.
I feel good about that. That was a fun move, especially with Kansas City, the way we play. It's been a lot of fun. So, but no, I mean, look, the season's not over in our eyes. we all know what teams can go on runs, and a lot of times the team that's hot in the end of the year does well in the playoffs. So that's got to be our motivation.
All right, Grim. We'll look for you in, I don't know, 5 years in an Airstream somewhere?
5 years. Easy, man. Let's make it seven.
Seven? All okay. Right. 7 years. I like that. I was thinking somewhere in between. Seven more years for Grim Zusi. Thanks for stopping by.
Cool. Yeah,
thanks,
appreciate guys. It, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Now that we're on YouTube, Charlie, I think you're definitely going to have to moonwalk your way out of this at the very end of the show. We'll save it for that. We got a little bit more mail coming for you right now. A question from Andrew in Brooklyn that I swear to God is not me. It is not me. I didn't do it.
Yeah, sure. Game working, and you're now putting together the mailbag.
This was in Monday's mailbag. This was in Monday's mailbag, which you put together.
Did you see it in Monday's mailbag?
I did.
Did you see it in Monday's mailbag?
Well, no,
your word against mine.
Guys, man, if it's about KU basketball, then we'll know.
It's not. It's a question for Bobby or Charlie or Kalen.
Oh, guess who was at the game today?
Paul Pierce?
No.
I hate you.
Drew Gooden.
Oh.
Whoa,
are you actually?
No, I have a picture of
okay,
him.
Okay.
100% took a selfie actually, with him.
Like, yeah, I wish you should have told me because I definitely would have taken
totally
a selfie with him.
I totally forgot that you went to Kansas.
Oh, wow. I have a baby, too. Did you know that? This one's for you, Charlie. Do players know when a game is nationally televised, and does it change the intensity or focus brought to the game? So we talked about this earlier with Atlanta. Would that matter to players? Would they think about that? Would that actually increase pressure or –
Oh, players know when it's on national television. You show up, you know the bright lights are on. Cameramen are coming in the locker room. They're eyeing you and putting on your cleats, and everyone's, you know, making jokes and cracking banter. And you know everyone wants to talk about this game after. You want to have the highlights. You want to be on ESPN. You know those are the games that everybody's watching, especially the small market teams. So if you want to make a name for yourself, you show up in those
games.
So
I have a question. National TV game. That was good. National TV game. Do you guys all pitch in and bring a barber into the locker room to get cut? Or does everyone have their own schedule?
See, now he's getting it.
Yeah.
National TV games,
everyone's
you best
clean.
Believe the night before, everyone's in the barbershop. Everyone. Maybe the morning of, barbershop, clean shave, ready to go.
You talk about putting your cleats on. You always see those shots in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
How set up are those? Do you know they're coming? Are they like, Charlie, we're going to get you. We need you to, like, keep your cleats off. They're going to get you.
Yeah, you have a feeling it's coming because you see the guy posted up, and he's kind of, like, just hawk-eyeing you.
Yeah.
And everyone knows, like, okay, he's been on a hot run. They're definitely coming in to film you. And as soon as it gets going, that's when the comments come flying from left and right and center, from every locker. Guys are like, "Hey, look at him! He's nervous." So, you know, it's always funny. You're trying to keep a straight face, like putting on your
try not
but
to.
But normally
screw up
you
the
can't.
Loop.
I could never keep a straight face.
I only do bunny ears. I've never actually learned how to tie my shoes in an adult way.
Loop and
so pull. I would definitely be the person that was like, "Don't put me down there. I don't want the nation to see that I don't actually know how to tie my shoes." Last one before we get out of here. This one's from Jed. Says, what's the benefit of having two transfer windows as opposed to one transfer deadline like other sports?
It's just the way FIFA works. I don't have a good answer for this other than...
You can address the roster
issues mid-season.
Mid-season. If you have a player has a crazy injury and he's not going to recover, if it's a long-term, maybe it's a career-ending, and he's a star player, you have the ability to go out and address that position. I think it's needed in a lot of cases for maybe there's a player with a bad attitude or something that you need to ship players. I think it's great that there's two windows. And the middle window is obviously not a longer one. It's the summer, the off-season windows that are typically longer.
If you were an MLS executive, would you go big in the winter window because it's preseason or summer because you're probably getting someone for cheaper?
I'm going winter because I want my player to have a full preseason and get to know his teammates. So you can, you know, you get all those kinks out before the season starts.
All right. That's it for us here today. This weekend, week 22, a bunch of good stuff. Dave, Laurie, Lindsay, and I will wrap it up on Match Day Central on Sunday. Five really, really good games among many
Wait, are you
important
hosting
games.
That? Or is Gasman?
I don't Laurie's know. That's a good it. Question.
Laurie has
a good point.
She's
going to
do it all midfielder, so she's going
to
host it.
Right. And now, so box you're, to box. You're not, are you going to go to box. The board?
I'm serving hummus in the green room,
yeah.
And I think Weeby's just cleaning shoes.
Yeah, just right. I'm just practicing tying my shoes in the back room.
We're just gonna have
me practice tying shoes.
We're worried about camps.
Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Atlanta and the LA Galaxy, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. You have New England, LAFC, Bruce and Bob on ESPN Plus.
That's
and
the then big one.
A triple header on Sunday. 4 p.m. on ESPN, Minnesota, Portland, 7:30 on FS1, DC, Philly, 10 on FS1, Seattle and Sporting, Kansas City. We're getting out of here for the last time, my partners in soccer. Thanks, guys. See ya.